Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and in this hour, true history. Later on, we'll hear about the Lewis and Clark expedition on the inheritance program. Right now, it's the Cavalcade of America, with the story The Night There Was No President, where we'll hear about the circumstances of the presidency of Theodore Roosevelt from January 29, 1952 on NBC, featuring Edwin Jerome, Ian Martin, Jack Edwards, and Parker Fennelly.
DuPont Company of Wilmington, Delaware, makers of better things for better living through chemistry, presents the Cavalcade of America. Tonight's star, Dean Stockwell, as Theodore Roosevelt, Jr. Tonight's story, The Night There Was No President.
Theodore Roosevelt came to the White House at the age of 42 with a young wife still in her 30s and six children. This is the story of the Roosevelt family, where they were and what they were doing the night there was no president.
How many boys have there been who could say, "My father is president of the United States"? Not very many. But any boy, especially if he's 13 years old, would like to be able to. I know. You see, my name is Theodore Roosevelt, Jr. Now, according to my history book, a new president always begins in Washington, with people cheering and bands going by, and... Well, that's not the way it happened to my father at all.
That's mine!
It is not! It's mine!
It's mine! Archie! There's more than enough for each of you at this table.
We started all this!
Boys, you heard your father.
Yes, ma'am.
Sorry.
Theodore, I'm so glad you were able to come up to the mountains with us.
Yes, so am I. Why, Edie, if somebody could have told me 3 days ago in Buffalo that I'd be here with all of you this morning, I wouldn't have believed it.
We didn't believe it either, that Father would be able to with us when we heard the terrible news. President McKinley had been shot. Father, who was vice president then, was in Buffalo for a whole week. But when it looked like Mr. McKinley would get better, Father joined us at the Tahawas Club in the Adirondacks. And that's how on Friday, the 13th of September, 1901, my family was all together having breakfast.
Father?
Clinton, aren't you hungry?
But
don't you want to grow up to be a mountain climber?
Yes, Father.
Well,
but...
then finish your oatmeal. Edie, any more coffee there?
Are you watching the time, Theodore?
Oh, don't worry. I told young Robinson I'd meet him at 9 o'clock. Never been late for a mountain climb yet.
In Switzerland, they have mountains so high you have to climb them with ropes.
I'll not have you looking down your nose at Mount Marcy, sir. I'll have you know it's the highest peak in the state of New York.
Father? Can I ask you a question?
Why, of course, Quentin. You may ask me a question. What is it?
Father, are we now the president?
No, son. We are not now the president. Mr. McKinley is going to be all right.
That was such good news when the telegram came. Isn't it wonderful, Theodore? Such a relief to think he's no longer in any danger.
Yes, Edie, indeed it is.
Father, was this man, this person who shot Mr. McKinley, was he a young man?
Yes, he was very young.
Well, why did he shoot the president of all people?
Didn't he like Mr. McKinley?
Father, weren't you afraid to go to Buffalo?
What do you mean?
Well, sir, what I meant was, weren't you afraid someone would shoot you?
Well, sir, I won't tell you I didn't think of that, Ted, because I did. But there are times when you can't afford to be afraid, even if you really are.
All the same, I'm happier to have you here with us. Here, at least, I know you're safe.
Well, Edie, I hope the time never comes when an officer of this country will be afraid to meet his fellow citizens on the street.
What was that? What dropped?
Sorry, Mother. Salt just fell right out of my hand.
Oh, well, pick it up. Put it back on the table.
Quick, Kermit, throw some over your left shoulder. Of all days to spill salt, Friday the 13th. That's unlucky.
Well, now, you mustn't be superstitious, son. You call a day like this unlucky? Why, look at it outside. It's beautiful. And we're all in good health, and the good news about the president. Why, we haven't a worry in the world.
It is a nice day to climb a mountain, isn't it, Father?
That it is. And, Ted, one of these days, you and I will climb Mount Marcy together. Well, you'll excuse me. Mustn't keep young Robinson waiting.
Will you be back by dinner time?
Of course. I'm having dinner with my family tonight. That is, if I'm invited.
I invite you, Father.
Me too, Father.
I invite
you,
Father.
Sure, me too.
Well, it looks as if the invitation is unanimous, Theodore.
Well, then, I unanimously accept with pleasure.
While Father went off to climb his mountain, without a worry in the world, something completely unexpected happened in Buffalo.
Hello? Hello? This is Eddie Uroot. President McKinley's condition has changed for the worse. The Vice President must be notified. Where is Mr. Roosevelt? How soon can he be reached?
It was then that Mr. Root, the Secretary of War, learned that the Vice President was 440 miles away, 40 miles from the nearest railroad station and 10 miles from a telephone. But what Mr. Root didn't know was that he was even farther away than that, hours from our cabin, high on a mountain.
Let's stop here a minute, Bab.
Suits me, sir.
I pushed a steady pace since we left the summit 2 hours ago, and we've a brook and a view.
Oh, this brook's is where the Hudson begins.
You don't say.
Hmm?
Never underestimate modest beginnings.
That's right, sir. Looks like rain.
Yeah, so it does. Well, we'd better push along, Bev. Here, I'll carry the rifle for a while.
I'm sorry you haven't seen any game, sir. But these mountains are full of it.
Oh, I didn't plan on hunting, Bev. One of the things I learned out west was always carry a rifle, not so much for the game you don't see if you do, as the game you're sure to see if you don't.
Well, I'll remember that the next time I go hunt. What was that?
I didn't hear anything.
Hello!
Listen, there it is again.
Oh, yes, I heard it now, Bev.
Hello over there. Where can I get across without waiting?
Well, just above you, there's a log. It's Harrison Hall from the club. What brings you all the way up here, Mr. Hall?
I have a message for Mr. Roosevelt.
For me?
I had quite a time finding you.
Oh, yes, has anything happened to my family?
It isn't your family, Mr. Roosevelt. It's this telegram. Came to the club for you this morning. Here you are, sir.
Oh, thank you. Gentlemen, President's condition is worse. I must return to the club at once.
Meanwhile, back in the cottage at Tahawus, we were spending an afternoon with Mother. Archie managed to fall in the creek for the fourth time in 10 days, and this frightened Mother almost to death. Then it was beginning to get dark.
Edie!
Theodore, what is it?
Edie, Mr. Hall brought this telegram to me on the mountain.
It's about the president?
Yes, Edie, his condition is worse.
Oh, Theodore.
Hasn't any word come here?
No, no, not a thing. Oh, what a time to be miles from the telephone.
Well, Mr. Hunter is driving down to the telephone to pick up any word there. Oh, Edie, I came so far away from Buffalo.
Oh, now, Theodore, you know you wouldn't be here if you hadn't thought the president was out of danger.
Yes, yes, but...
And I know you can depend on William Loeb. You've always told me what a fine secretary he is. He's there, and he knows...
You think I should leave right now, Edie?
Did the message ask you to?
No, it didn't. Of course, it could be the president has just had a temporary relapse. I just don't want to bother those people again, Edie.
Yes, I understand.
Those 2 days I was there, I felt so helpless standing beside all those anxious people. I felt I was intruding.
Then I think you should wait to hear from Mr. Loeb. But I'll pack your things just in case.
Thank you, Edie. Edie, do you know what I thought all the way down that mountain?
What, Theodore?
I thought, if anything should happen, there will be those who'll say the Vice President isn't old enough or wise enough. But that's not what is important now. Nothing must happen to the President.
That night, I couldn't sleep, no matter how hard I tried. I kept thinking about all the things that had been happening. It seemed so still and dark. And then, after a while, it started to rain.
Dad!
The thunder awakened Quentin, and I went to his bed.
I'm scared.
Shh, it'll be all right. It's just a thunderstorm.
Oh, but what's going to happen? Is Father going away?
Maybe. I don't know.
But he'll get shot. I don't want Father to go away.
No, he won't, Quentin. Remember, he was a rough rider. Don't you remember? Nothing will happen to him.
Who is that talking?
Shh, listen. Somebody's out there with Mother and Father. I think it's Mr. Hunter. Come on, let's see who it is.
I almost thought for a while I'd never make it up here, I tell you. The rain was so bad I couldn't see a yard in front of me.
But didn't they say anything else?
No, ma'am. Just that the president is in a coma.
Listen, did you hear that?
But no official message for me? No telegram?
No, sir, no. When I talked to your secretary, he said that you ought to leave for Buffalo at once.
Ah, go on, get ready.
My father's going away to get shot, just like Mr. McKinley.
Quentin, come back here.
Quentin, what on earth are you doing out there?
I'm sorry, Mother. She heard voices.
My father's going to get shot.
Oh, there, dear. Well, you boys should be in bed.
Oh, please, Mother, can't we stay up until after Father leaves?
Well, all right. Mr. Hunter, is the road very bad?
Now, don't you worry, ma'am. My buckboard's in good condition, and that horse knows his way.
Yes, but how is he going to get down the mountain?
Well, the way we've planned it, it'll work like this. I'll take Mr. Roosevelt and the buckboard as far as the village. There, he'll change to a carriage that'll take him to Aiden's lair. Mike Cronin is standing by, ma'am, right now.
And then?
Then Mike will take over in his buckboard. Once they get to the North Creek Station, everything will be all right. They got the train waiting.
Yes, but the weather and the mountain roads.
Don't you worry, ma'am. We ain't going to let anything happen to the vice president. There's a lot of mud and some places where the going is tough, but we'll get him there.
If only he gets there in time. Before anything happens.
Well, I'm ready, Mr. Hunter.
I don't want you to go.
Oh, there, son. It'll be all right.
I'll take this bag out, sir.
Huh? Oh, thank you.
And I'll see you tomorrow, ma'am.
Yes, Mr. Hunter.
Now then, Ted, you look after your mother.
Yes, sir.
And you boys be good. Do what she says, huh?
Yes, Father.
Bye, Edie. Don't worry. I'll get there in time. I've got to.
At breakfast next morning, even Quentin didn't make any noise. Mother kept telling us that Father would send us word as soon as he could. Mr. Hunter would bring it. We should be patient and not to worry. So after breakfast, we children took turns watching for the trail for Mr. Hunter. It was just past noon.
Mother, he's coming! He's coming!
Oh, at last.
Are you sure it isn't somebody else?
Come and see!
Whoa! Oh, all right.
Will you look at that wagon? I'll bet you couldn't pry that mud off with a crowbar.
Easy, boy.
Oh, Mr. Hunter. Is everything all right?
Now, ma'am, you've got nothing to worry about at all. Mr. Roosevelt boarded the train for Buffalo at 5:30 this morning.
5:30? He traveled all night, and in that storm.
Here's a telegram, ma'am, from Mr. Roosevelt, sent at 7 o'clock this morning.
Oh, thank you.
12 hours they held that train, full steam up.
Did you hear that, Mother? They held the train 12... Mother, what is it?
President McKinley died at 2:15 this morning.
It is September 19-1. President McKinley has just died. In Buffalo, a presidential cabinet without a president prepares for the ceremony that will make Theodore Roosevelt the 26th president of the United States. In the meantime, in the small mountain cabin in the Adirondacks, Mrs. Roosevelt and the children eagerly question Mr. Hunter.
How long did it take you, Mr. Hunter?
I'd sure like to keep a locomotive full steam up for 12 hours.
Did you break a record, Mr. Hunter?
No, not me, lad. That horse of mine must weigh 1,400 pounds. Took us 2 hours to make the lower works.
Well, that's a record. 9 miles in 2 hours.
Ma'am, I talked to the men who work the relays, and they say that your husband is one of the nerviest men ever.
Sure he is. because he's a rough rider.
Archie.
It seems there was this place in the road where a log was kind of across it. One side was a drop, about 75 feet.
75 feet?
Cronin wanted to stop the horses, but you know, ma'am, Mr. Roosevelt wouldn't let him. He said, I'm not afraid if you're not. Push ahead. He'll make a fine president, ma'am.
President? My father is president. He's my father, too. He belongs to all of us.
Well, Miss Roosevelt, I suppose you'll be leaving us here at the club and going to the White House.
Yes, I suppose we will be leaving.
Yeah. Well, whenever you and the children want to be taken down the mountain, why, the buckboard will be ready. Any time at all.
Well, that's very kind of you, Mr. Hunter. We'll be going home to Oyster Bay first, as soon as we can get packed this afternoon.
Mother, do you think Father's in Buffalo right now?
Well, could he be there this early, Mr. Hunter?
The train ought to get in by 2:00.
Well, it's 3:00 now.
Oh, dear. I just realized. What do you suppose he'll wear to take the oath in? He certainly can't wear that suit he has on. It must be spattered with mud.
Don't you worry about it, ma'am. He'll make out all right. But it's just a shame that you and the children can't see the president take the oath. Why, ma'am, this is history.
Yes, Mr. Hunter. It is a shame. I would like to have had the children see their father at a moment like this.
Yeah. Well, I better get over to the club. But don't forget now, Miss Roosevelt. When you and the children are ready to leave, you let me know, huh?
Thank you, Mr. Hunter.
Goodbye, Mr. Hunter.
Goodbye,
Mr.
Hunter. Goodbye, boys. Goodbye.
Mother, if Father had been elected president, could we have watched him take the oath?
Why, yes, Ted, of course. Well, now, children, the first thing for us to do is pack.
You know who administers the oath, Mother? The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in a robe.
Ah, how do you know so much?
I read it in my history book.
I'm glad you reminded me, Ted. You children be sure to collect all your school books. We don't want to leave any behind.
Is the White House really white?
Of course it is. Anybody knows that.
Mother? Mother, mm-hmm. Aren't we going home ever again, ever?
Of course we're going home, Quentin. And then we're all going to a new home.
All of us? Even me?
Of course, Quentin. We're going to be together just like we've always been. Aren't we, Mother?
Yes, dear. We'll be together as we've always been.
Only now we'll be together in the White House in Washington.
I know lots of people who live in White Houses. What's so great about living in the White House?
Well, Archie, the White House is a symbol. While we live there, everything we do and everything we say will be an example to people who live in White Houses and Brown Houses and Gray Houses all over the country.
And that goes for people who live in apartment houses, too, doesn't it, Mother?
Be quiet, Kermit. Mother's talking now.
Well, children, we can discuss all this later. Right now, I want you boys to gather all your things together and stack them on your beds.
Everything, Mother?
Everything. Let's get started right away. Go on now. Well, Ted, you'll be sure that nothing is missing. Toys, games, and books.
And then what'll I do?
Oh, well, just keep the boys entertained and away from that brook.
Mother.
Yes, dear?
Do you feel funny inside like I do?
Just how do you feel funny, Ted?
Well, I don't know exactly. Mostly it's in my stomach, I guess.
I think I understand. This is a very special day, Ted. From this day on, all our lives will be different.
I'll never forget Mother saying that. From this day on, all our lives will be different. In front of Mother, we children were serious. But during the rest of the day, when we were by ourselves, we made all kinds of plans for living in Washington. Archie told Kermit that chocolate cake was served 3 times every day at the White House. I saw myself standing straight and tall beside Father while he made laws and visited with kings. I made sure of all our belongings were ready for Mother to pack, and then I picked up my history book. My history book.
I can't find my Indian arrowhead Father gave me.
Well, I haven't got it.
It's right there on the bed.
Oh, thanks. What are you doing with that history book, Ted? Come on, put it on the bed with the rest of your things.
Does he really wear a robe?
Who?
The Supreme Court.
Oh, you mean the Chief Justice. Here, I'll prove it to you. Right in this book. Here's a picture, see?
That man doesn't have a robe on.
Not him. He's the president. That's Mr. Cleveland. He was a president a long time before Mr. McKinley.
We surely have lots of presidents.
Sure. And Father's one now. He's got to take the oath of office just like that, too. I'll bet your father's taking the oath in Buffalo right now.
Wish we were there to see him.
Listen, I've got an idea.
What, Ted?
If we can't be there to see Father, we'll pretend we're there.
You're crazy.
No, I'm not. We can do the old ceremony right here.
We don't know what it is.
Yes, we do. It's in the book. I'll be father.
Who can I be?
Well, let's see. Somebody's got to be the justice.
I'll be the justice. No, you're not. I'm the justice. I've got a robe on.
That's just a blanket and you know it. Ted, who are these other men in the picture?
They're cabinet members. You know, like Mr. Knox, the attorney general.
Mr. Root, a cabinet member?
Well, sure, he's Secretary of War.
He found a frog once with a $5 gold piece right in his...
Archie, you settle down and be serious.
All right.
I'm going to be Mr. Root. Let Archie be the justice in his old role.
All right, let's start. Right now in Buffalo, this is what's happening to Father. He's taking the oath of office. You stand here, Archie. Will the cabinet please stand here? That's you, Mr. Root.
Oh, right here?
Archie, you read the oath in the book. Stand here facing me. And say to me, just like the justice is saying to Father, raise your right hand and repeat after me.
Raise your right hand and repeat after me.
Now, you read the oath down here at the bottom of the page. Just fill in the blank space like this. I, Theodore Roosevelt.
All right. I, Theodore Roosevelt.
I, Theodore Roosevelt.
Do, what's this word?
Solemnly.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully,
execute.
Execute the office of President of the United States.
That I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States. And will
to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
Oh, yes,
may I offer my felicitations, Mr. President?
Thank you, gentlemen.
When will you be starting for Washington, Mr. President?
I don't know, Elihu. Much to be done. But right now, I'd like to send word to my family.
And so we learned that Father became the 26th President of the United States in a borrowed frock coat. And then, later, we moved to our new home, the White House. It seems strange to all of us, even to Mother. I remember one day I overheard a conversation between Mother and Mr. Cleveland, one of our former presidents. He was standing beside her, and just as I came by, I saw him take her hand.
It is a large place, but after a while, it'll seem less a museum and more like a home to you.
Do you really think so, Mr. Cleveland?
Well, I felt lost here at first, but only in the beginning. You'd feel this way about moving into any new home.
It's not only the bigness and strangeness, but... Oh, Mr. Cleveland, my husband is so young.
Don't worry. Don't you worry at all. He's going to be all right.
I'm sure if Mr. Cleveland said he was going to be all right, he would be. But just the same, there was something about Father that worried me. I wondered if now that he was president and belonged to all the people... if he was still my father. It wasn't until one night at the dinner table, the first evening we were all together, that my worries were answered. All of us children sat around, kind of quietly. We looked at each other and didn't say much.
May I have the salt, please?
Certainly.
Thank you.
May I please have more bread?
Well, what's going on around here? What are you all looking so serious for?
Well, Father, now that we're in the White House and everything's...
Now that we're in the White House? Well, nothing's going to change because we're here. Why, boys, this is our home.
And then I knew it was all right. From then on, it was our home.
That's mine.
It is not.
Archie,
it is so
not. Archie, there's enough dessert for each of you.
Yes.
Sorry, sir.
Yes, sir.
Father, can I ask you a question, sir?
Yes, Quentin, you may ask your father one question.
Father, are we now the president?
Yes, sir. We are now the president.
Thanks to Dean Stockwell and the Cavalcade Players for tonight's story, The Night There Was No President.
The Cavalcade of America on Tuned to Yesterday, a broadcast from NBC on January 29, 1952. And that wasn't the first time the Cavalcade of America took on stories from Roosevelt's life, like Sheriff Teddy in 1948, telling the story of him in the Dakota Badlands, and in 1949's The Return of the Lodger, where he lent a helping hand for reform of homelessness. It's an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. And now it's Inheritance, bringing us the story of the Lewis and Clark Expedition in 30 minutes from May 30th, 1954 on NBC.
Inheritance. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with the American Legion, presents a story out of that great composite of visions, struggles, and victories of the American past. Our Inheritance. Yes, we Americans are heirs to a vast fortune. A fortune composed of many things. The victory of General Washington at Yorktown. And the voice of a great bell proclaiming liberty. It is a tall, gaunt man holding a nation together through a cruel war. And a people knit closer through the magic of the telegraph. Let us now go back to a significant chapter in America's history, one which we all share in our inheritance. This month marks the 150th anniversary of the start of a great tale of adventure and daring, the trailblazing expedition of Lewis and Clark in 1804 through an uncharted wilderness to the Pacific Northwest, a vast territory known in history as the Louisiana Purchase. Theirs is a bright and brave chapter in the history of our then new nation. Tonight, we pay tribute to the courage, daring, and diplomacy of two young American leaders, Captains Lewis and Clark. It is the year 1803. President Thomas Jefferson has finished dictating a long letter to his private secretary, Meriwether Lewis.
Send a copy of that to Vice President Burr, and that should take care of it.
Yes, sir.
You can transcribe it later. Right now, I want to talk to you about something I've had on my mind for a long time.
Anything wrong, Mr. President?
Not at all, not at all. No, as a matter of fact, you're about the best secretary I've had. But how do you feel about it?
Well, I was very honored when you offered me the position, Mr. President. It's been quite an experience.
Perhaps. But I've noticed your restlessness lately, my young friend. After all, spending an early life in the woods, hunting, trapping, then a short career in the active army might cause a man to champ at the bit once he's settled down with a routine job like this.
I'll admit it lacks in excitement at times, sir, but it's highly interesting.
Yes, the inner workings of a government do have their tense moments. But tell me, are you familiar with the territory known as Louisiana?
Of course, sir.
Then you also know that we're under negotiation with France for the purchase of that territory.
Yes, sir.
Now, I'd like to pose a very pertinent question. Just what are we buying?
I'm afraid I don't follow you, Mr. President.
Well, let me put it this way. The Louisiana territory is vast, almost unexplored. And I have reason to believe that our negotiations will be successful. That territory will become a part of our nation. But is it good land, rich land, valuable and fur, conducive to settlement?
I can appreciate your concern, Mr. President.
Well, then you can also appreciate the need for exploration of this territory. It must be charted, must be mapped. Many questions concerning it must be answered.
Oh, then you propose such an exploration at this time, sir?
I do. In the past, I've helped instigate a few attempts at exploring our western regions. They failed, but I propose one now that I hope and pray will not fail. You sit back, Lewis. You're about to fall off the edge of your chair.
Oh, of course.
I knew such a conversation would excite you, my young friend. But from my observations during these 2 years that you've assisted me, Excitement of youth is not your only attribute. Courage, honesty, much daring are a part of your composition. Lewis, the leadership of the expedition is yours for the asking.
I'm overwhelmed, sir.
Well, of course, if you don't want the responsibility...
Oh, no, sir. Yes. This is so wonderful, I don't know what to say.
That's quite some time away, my boy. Perhaps your power of speech will return in time for you to say goodbye.
I'm sure it will, sir.
I want you to take a new look at books, study for a while, botany and so on. Then we'll select your men and outfit the party.
Speaking of men, sir, may I make a suggestion?
By all means, it's your expedition.
Recently in the Army, I renewed a boyhood friendship with William Clark. We often talked of adventure, and Will is probably as qualified as I am to lead such a party.
Clark. In relation to George Rogers Clark?
His younger brother, sir. There is no one with whom I'd rather share my command.
Well, he comes from good stock, and with such an enthusiastic recommendation from you, how can I refuse? You write him and see what he thinks of the idea.
I will, sir, right away. But I think I know what he'll say. This is the answer to a dream.
Dan, may it answer all our dreams, Lewis. And I wish you the best of luck.
William Clark was notified and quickly accepted. But there were months of preparation ahead. Early in March 1803, Meriwether Lewis left for Philadelphia, there to study under men of science of that city. When young Lewis had finished his studies, he proceeded to Camp River Dubois, just north of St. Louis, where Will Clark had already selected and had begun training a small group of early volunteers.
Hip, 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 ho!
All right, Sergeant Floyd, dismissed until this afternoon.
Yes, miss.
Well, they're drilling well, Captain Clark.
Yes, they are. So far, we have a hardy group. Let's hope we can recruit more of the same caliber. Tell me, Sergeant, who's that large man over there? I've forgotten his name.
Oh, that's Patrick Gass, sir. Private Gass.
I'd like to speak to him.
Gass? Private Gass!
He's a good man, sir.
Yes, sir.
Captain Clark would like to speak to you, Gass.
That'll be all, Sergeant. Check the men's muskets and prepare for target practice this afternoon.
Yes, sir.
Gass, I noticed you from my window earlier this morning.
I'm hoping I did nothing wrong, sir.
On the contrary, you were throwing a tomahawk at a target. I believe you had a wager with one of the men.
That I did, sir. Well, not that I'm a gambling man at heart, sir, but... Well, sir, the young pup bet me I couldn't split a string at 20 paces, sir.
Well, all I'm interested in is that you did split that string. I was very impressed. It's not easy to master the tomahawk, but apparently you have. I want you to instruct the other men in its use.
Bless me, sir. You want each of the men to carry a tomahawk?
I do. From my correspondence with Captain Lewis, I understand we'll be traveling through many Indian territories. I want the men to be adept with every weapon it's convenient to carry. In an emergency, should our powder get damp, we may owe our safety to other weapons. For one thing, tomahawks.
Yes, sir. The point is well taken, sir.
This afternoon at rifle practice, I'll see that each man is issued a tomahawk. You will then be in charge of their instructions. The men should...
Sir, I beg your pardon.
Yes, Private, what is it?
Captain Lewis, sir. He just arrived.
Good. Where is he?
I showed him to your quarters, sir.
Fine, thank you. Gass, we'll discuss this training later.
Yes, sir.
Shall I have the cook prepare a meal, sir?
Yes, I doubt if Captain Lewis has taken lunch yet. Have it sent over to my quarters.
Very good, sir.
Welcome to the finest army post north of St. Louis.
Clark, you're certainly a sight for sore eyes.
It's been a long time, Lewis.
Yes, we haven't stood like this since our army days, huh? Well, looks as if we'll share one another's company for a long time to come.
True. What you've written of the expedition sounds wonderful. I haven't been this excited since we hunted possum together back in Virginia.
You still remember that?
I remember that a young fellow 10 years old bagged the first possum and put a 14-year-old Will Clark to shame.
Ah, just a lucky shot. Let's get back to the present. The president's basic instructions call for us to, see here, follow the Missouri River to its headwaters, cross the highlands and navigable waters of the Columbia River, and follow it to the Pacific.
Sounds fine, if it works.
Well, it's believed that this will be our best route, but of course it's based on a map that was drawn partly from hearsay and partly from imagination. Who knows what barriers lie ahead in that wilderness?
Well, let's hope before long we'll know from experience.
And so the months passed quickly, months of recruiting, laying in supplies, and rigorous drilling.
All right, keep firing. Two bullseyes per man, and you can break for chow, but not until. Morgan, bring your shots up. Come on now, pour it on.
No, 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 lad, no. You must let the handle go. Easy, like. Now watch. You see, lad, don't be throwing a tommy hawk like it was a hot stick you wanted to be rid of. Jeez, it's gentle. Gentle. Thanks. That's better. Now you're getting the swing of it.
Finally, the preparations were complete. The party at full strength consisted of 45 men, 15 of whom were boatmen who were to go only as far as the Indian villages of the Mandan Nation. On May 14, 1804, the party broke camp and proceeded up the mighty Missouri. Destination, the Pacific Coast. Route, make one.
Come on, Gas. Pull on that oar. Or maybe you could use your precious tomahawk to paddle us upstream.
Less talking, Gordon, my lad. I'm all pulling on your oars, my sentiment. Oh, bad Sestwood, Patrick Gass, whose boyhood dream is to be a soldier, sitting in a boat like a blooming sailor.
Maybe you'd like to swim up the Missouri.
Thank you, lad. No, it's much drier in the boat. Besides, it's a chance for experience.
Experience?
Oh, sure. When we reach the Pacific, I just might not come home overland like the rest. I might just build a little canoe and set out for China. Oh, now there's an expedition to stir an Irishman's heart.
Oh, no. Suppose for the time being you just keep stirring the water here, Gas. To me, the Pacific coast looks as far away from here as China. I'll even brew you a cup of tea if we get there.
When we get there, laddie boy. When?
With abundant game upon the shores and the morale of the men good, the party pushed westward with little difficulty. On June 26th, they reached the mouth of the Kansas River, where now stands Kansas City. 43 days had been consumed in crossing what is now the state of Missouri. By July 26th, they made camp at the mouth of the Platte River, 600 miles from their point of embarkation.
Gas, you, Gordon, Goodrich, and Howard stand watch.
Better post an extra man to the boats, too, Sergeant Lloyd.
I'll take that watch myself, Captain Clark. My bones are tired, but somehow I don't feel like sleeping.
Well, don't overtax yourself, Sergeant. We've still a long way to go.
Yes, sir. Hello, Sergeant.
Good evening, Captain Lewis.
Clark, could I speak to you for a moment?
Oh, of course. That's all, Sergeant.
Yes, sir. Clark, I've been thinking that perhaps we should push on in the morning instead of spending time here talking with the Indians. They're already used to white men from the traders who stopped here.
Seems a good idea to me.
From all reports, we'll have our difficulty with Indians on up the Missouri.
The Sioux?
No. They seem to regard war as a sport.
Well, let's hope they don't play any war games with us. My hair may have grown quite long, but I don't relish a Sioux haircut.
Gas, must you keep throwing that tomahawk?
Practice, lad, practice.
Well, practice somewhere else. Every time I see that tomahawk bury itself into that tree, I think maybe soon one might bury itself in my skull.
Oh, now my aim is not off that much, lad.
Not you, but those redskins around here. 2 days ago now. We've been sitting around here while the officers exchange gab with those chiefs. And the rest of the Indians just mill around, stare, and never a smile.
Maybe I could tell them a good joke, Gordon Boy. Then you wouldn't have a stern-faced Indian scout, would you? He'd be smiling.
One of your jokes would get us all burned at the stake for sure. I'd just like to move on.
Oh, now, lad, don't be fretting. The Indians have put out the peace pipe, and we've put out clothes and food. Everybody's happy.
Except me. Sure, they say peace now, but the next minute they may change their minds, and bam! I don't trust them any further than you can throw a stick.
Throw a stick? Or a...
Will you please practice somewhere else?
That's trouble over here, boys.
Nothing, Sergeant. Nothing at all. We were just discussing whether or not an Indian tomahawk would penetrate Gordon's skull. And I doubt if it could.
Well, just keep it friendly, boys. We're all a little on edge. But
Captain Lewis tells me the powwow's about over. He doesn't expect trouble from...
What's the matter, Sergeant?
I feel funny.
You better sit down, sir.
Yeah.
Gordon, get Captain Clark, quick.
How is he, Clark?
No better this morning. Seems to have a high fever. He's getting weaker all the time. And this blasted heat doesn't help any.
Is private gas in the shelter with him?
No, Gordon is. I sent gas off to get some sleep. He was up all night.
Well, so were you. I suppose you get some rest, too.
No, I can't sleep. I'd better get food, though. Did the chiefs leave happy?
Yes, they promised no interference in this region anyway. Go eat. I'll look in on Floyd.
All right.
You better breakfast, too, Gordon.
I'm not hungry, sir.
One sick man is enough, Private. Go on.
Yeah.
Yes, Floyd.
This are you, Captain.
I'm right here.
Hey, I gotta move on, Kevin.
Just take it easy. Everything's all right.
Gotta move on.
Be easy there.
I can move on. I gotta move on.
You just rest now. We'll be moving on soon. You'll be well soon.
Kevin.
Yes?
This expedition. I always dreamed of something like this. In unknown. I want to go on.
Floyd. Gordon, get Captain Clark.
Yes, sir.
Good luck, Floyd. Yours is a greater expedition than ours.
Sergeant Floyd was buried atop a high bluff near a small river which was given his name. Upon the votes of the men, Private Patrick Gass was made sergeant, and the party did what Floyd had desired. Move on. In late October, the expedition reached the Mandan Indian Nation, some 1,600 miles from St. Louis. Here, Fort Mandan was constructed, and the men settled down to endure the winter and await the coming of spring.
Am I intruding?
Oh, come on in, Clark. Better double the guard immediately, Sergeant. We have several guests on the post today.
Yes, sir.
Well, what's on your mind, Clark?
I have a surprise for you. What do we need most when we start out again?
An accurate map.
Something within the realm of possibility, please.
You haven't found a guide, have you?
I have. Not only that, but an interpreter all wrapped in the same package.
And he speaks English?
She speaks English.
What?
Two squaws came on the post today. You can imagine my surprise when one of them spoke to me in English.
I don't understand.
She belonged to a tribe of the Snake Indians. The Mandans captured her in a war and sold her at an early age to a French trapper named Chabonneau. He taught her what English he knows, raised her, then married her. We couldn't ask for a better guide into the country we're going. She spent her childhood there.
Of course, but a woman...
Well, she followed Chabonneau on his trapping expeditions. These Indian women are a hardy lot, Lewis.
Well, if she could keep up, we do need a guide.
Well, after she spoke to me, she took me to meet her husband, Chabonneau.
Huh?
He agrees to go with us if we'll pay him. All she cares about is seeing her own people again.
Well,
it might be hard to find another guide.
All right. Only I never thought when I left Washington I'd be led across the country by a woman.
The woman's name was Sacagawea, which translated meant bird woman. She and her husband moved on to the post to await the passing winter and guide the party on. But having a woman on the post was a strange experience for the explorers. One noteworthy experience occurred 5 months after the arrival of Sacagawea and her husband, Chabonneau.
No. Just relax, Chabonneau. Do you care for a smoke?
Oui.
I'll roll you one. No reason to be getting... all excited, you know. just relax. Don't get worked up, no.
Sergeant, it is you who is spilling the tobacco.
Eh? Oh, well, this is all new to me, you know. I mean...
Oh, listen.
Oh, Lord. I couldn't have taken much more. I better go tell Captain Lewis and your recruit has just answered your old call.
In April, the boatmen left the party and returned to St. Louis carrying documents, collections, and trophies. There remained 32 persons to carry on, including the infant son of Sacagawea and Chabonneau. The Bird Woman proved an able guide. And on May 26th, Captain Lewis ascended to the summit of a ridge of hills surrounding the camp and had his first glimpse of the Rocky Mountains. Lewis wrote in his journal,
"Obstructions continue and fatigue the men excessively. The banks are so slippery in some places and the mud so adhesive that they are unable to wear their moccasins. One fourth of the time, they're obliged to be up to their armpits in the cold water, and sometimes they walk for several hours over the sharp fragments of rock which have fallen from the hills."
Howard! Don't let that rope slacken, lad! Keep it taut!
Sergeant, over here!
Now, what is it, Gordon?
Goodrich has a bad gash on his foot!
It's all right.
Move on up shore, Goodrich. I'll take that line. All right, Donald. Heave!
The party pushed on. Then finally in August, Sacagawea led them to several Indian villages, villages she had not visited since her childhood.
Goodrich, have you seen the sergeant?
I think he's in the Council of Chiefs with Lewis and Clark.
Oh, it's a wonder he isn't practicing with his tomahawk. Seems to get the urge every time we're around Redskins.
Don't tell me you're worried about this bunch. Why, they're the Bird Woman's people. They've been friendlier to us than any tribe we've met.
An Indian is an Indian, and I... Oh, well... Here comes gas now.
Never again, lads. Never again will I see it happen.
Huh? What are you mumbling about?
Storybook. Bless me, if I didn't see something you only read about in a storybook.
As if you could read.
Gordon, your petty insults will not rile me this day. My heart is touched. At the council, the Bird Woman sat down to interpret for the captains. And then suddenly her eyes filled with tears. She stared at the chief, cried, then ran to him. Lads, it was her own brother.
Her brother?
Aye. Needless to say, it was a touching sight. The chief was moved, too, only not so much as Sacagawea. Matter of fact, I felt it tear in my eye myself. Like a storybook it was.
I wish I'd seen that. The tear in your eye, I mean. Imagine, Patrick Gass, human being, like a storybook, all right.
By trading with the Shoshone Indians, the party acquired horses and proceeded westward. The trail was rough as it wound through the Rockies, and heavy snow caused the horses to stumble often. Progress was slow, and by the middle of September, all wild game had vanished, and melted snow was the only water supply.
It's no use pushing on in this storm, Clark.
I agree. We can camp on that ledge.
Charging gas?
Yes, sir. We'll make camp over there.
Very good, sir.
What about food?
No game, sir.
Well, then, kill one of the horses.
Captain Clark.
What is it, Sergeant?
Another man on sick list, sir.
Disease proved a hard enemy, but slowly the starved, weary party made its way down toward level land. They had crossed the Rockies. Yet even here, food was scarce, the danger of starvation ever present. Lewis fell very ill, but led his party on to the bank of a small river before he became unconscious.
Seems to be fever, sir.
Yes, he's resting comfortably now. I don't think it's too serious. What about the rest of the men, Sergeant?
They're weak, sir.
Well, they'll still have to work. It's either that or lie down and die.
Yes, sir.
This river must be a tributary of the Columbia. And the Columbia leads right to the Pacific.
Oh, it will be a relief to take to water again, sir.
That it will. But we'll need something to take to water in. Order the men to begin work immediately on canoes.
Within a week, Captain Lewis was on his feet, and the weary company once more took to the waterway, down the Lemhi into the Great Salmon, and then to the waters of the Columbia. By trading with Indians along the way, food was secured, and slowly the party regained its health. There were still many miles and many obstacles to face. But the group labored on, and finally, on the 7th of November, 18 months from the day they left St. Louis, a camp was set up. A camp from which was a clear view of the great Pacific Ocean. The westward journey was done.
How long ago it seems.
What's that, Clark?
I was remembering the day I got your letter asking me to join the expedition. Only it seems so long ago. Not merely a few seasons, but an eternity.
I know how you feel. Expanse of this country, even beyond our anticipation. It's awe-inspiring. It's almost as if the section we know as home is in another world, in another time.
Yes. And there will still be a hard struggle to get back to that world.
But it can be done, Will. We've proven that. Sergeant?
Yes, sir?
We'll rest here a few days before moving on to a permanent winter camp. Let the men relax. They've earned it.
Yes, sir. And if I might take the liberty, I'd like to say... Well, sir, congratulations.
And the same to you, Gas, and to all the men. They have earned it.
Congratulations. The first of many to be bestowed upon the Lewis and Clark expedition. The winter on the coast was hard. The journey homeward is equal in hardship and danger as the westward march. Still, their ragged party reached St. Louis and home September 23rd, 1806, and were greeted by a public which had long before given up the expedition as lost. Many honors were heaped upon Meriwether Lewis and William Clark, two young men not unlike the young men of today who venture into the unknown realm of supersonic speed. This month marks the 150th anniversary of the Lewis and Clark undertaking. It took them 28 months to cover more than 4,000 miles. Today, any young pilot could cover that same western route in about 8 hours. Yet, the spirit is the same. Adventure, determination, courage. A spirit which is the inheritance of every American. You have been listening to Inheritance, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with the American Legion.
Inheritance on Tuned to Yesterday from May 30th, 1954, the eighth program in that NBC series. And that brings to an end this hour of True History on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for tuning in.